You ready for Basecamp Fitness's best deal yet? 7 days for $7. That's right, 7 days for $7. It's time to double down on your fitness goals and snag this offer before it's gone. Call or text Basecamp Fitness at 913-232-9770 or go to basecampfitness.com to learn more.
All right, a Wednesday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Corey Anderson and the Drake. We head up until 2 o'clock. We've got you for the next 4 hours, a lot of football on the docket, some college basketball as well that we will get into with the local schools all playing last night and all winning last night. About that, huh? That's when's the last time that happened? I have no idea. I didn't go and check, nor did I want to. So all three of the local schools winning last night. We'll get a little Big 12 basketball talk today. We'll talk with Matt Tate coming up later on this hour. Lawrence Turner, WorldKUSports.com. KU goes down to Oklahoma and gets the win. Each time we talk with Matt Tate, it's presented by 23rd Street Brewery. We do that today. Cynthia Freeland at 11 o'clock, NFL Network analytics expert. We'll get her thoughts on the playoffs, the eight remaining teams, the Chiefs and Steelers, what that performance meant, the Buffalo Bills over the Patriots, what that performance meant, part D of the Chiefs and Bills this year, rematch of earlier this year, rematch of the AFC Championship game last year, Mahomes and Allen, the debate that's going on, the pressure on which quarterback is greater, Mahomes or Allen, who would you take in the game, who wins the game, which quarterback moving forward, all of these great conversations that we've had, it seems, about 20 times over the last couple of years with Patrick Mahomes whenever he is playing a good quarterback or a quarterback that's playing well. These conversations come up a lot, and this week we know is not going to be any different, especially with the way that Josh Allen played last week, no doubt, and the fact that the Bills won earlier this year in Kansas City. So we'll talk with Cynthia Freeland at 11 o'clock, NFL Network analytics expert. We'll hang out with Mick Schaefer in the 1 o'clock hour, excuse me, noon, I should say, with the Chiefs at 1 o'clock. But Mick Schaefer in the noon hour, thrift store prices right today. And then, as I said, we'll hear from the Chiefs coming up today, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and then we'll find out who else will be at the podium with the head coach and QB1 today. 913-912-4810 is the text line to be a part of the show today, 913-912-4810. If you want to text in and join us, you can certainly do that, 913-912-4810. To join us, try to get to as many texts as we can today, even though my app is not loading, but I'll try to get to those as it loads and we can read through those texts today. So let's get into the show. Let's start it with college basketball last night. As I mentioned, that all three of the local schools won last night, which is pretty awesome. KU finds a way to pull out a win at Oklahoma, where they struggled at times, and Ochai leaves the game and has to have x-rays and then comes back and has, you know, 10 points there in the game, and late shots, and Brown with the big three, defensive stops. They get the win over Oklahoma after, what, a five-minute scoring drought? They've had that a couple of times. In Stillwater, they had a nine-minute scoring drought, and then last night they had a five-minute scoring drought, but they won both of those games. K-State with the big win over number 23 Texas, 66-65, trailing early and then getting back in the game and then playing right there with Texas on the road and a Chris Beard squad. So good on K-State, Bruce Weber, his squad, in getting that win. And then Missouri, shocking the world, going to Ole Miss and winning by 25.
What in the world was that?
And what I would say is a fireable offense.
Oh, goodness.
Because, you know, we talk about Konzo and keeping his job. He goes into your house, your arena, and beats you by 25?
And you're a nine-point favorite in the game? Yeah.
I'm not sure Kermit Davis would make it back to his house that night without submitting his letter of resignation or just a flat-out firing. Sorry, you can't do it, man. What year is this for Kermit Davis? Is this five for Kermit Davis there at Ole Miss?
Today I learned that Kermit Davis coaches Ole Miss, so congratulations to you.
Let's see. He started in 18, so then 19, 20. So this is year four for Kermit Davis. Where did he coach before Ole Miss?
I know this, but I don't know it off the top. When you say it, I'm going to recognize it, but I don't remember.
They had a big upset in the first round as a 215 over.
Was it like
Michigan
a Winthrop?
State. Middle Tennessee State.
Middle Tennessee State, okay.
So he went from Middle Tennessee State to essentially southern, Mississippi, just southern Tennessee, and took over at Ole Miss. And year four, loses by 25 to Mizzou at home. Ugh,
that's not supposed to happen.
No.
I mean,
no,
you can get upset, I guess, if Mizzou plays right. You know, I mean, but losing by 25 at home to that team?
No. Yeah, it's.
I mean, they don't even have Mark. They don't even have Mark Smith anymore, you know. And Mark Smith's the one that's tearing up college basketball right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have Mark Smith on your team, and you go and win that game, again, fireable offense. I mean, and Ole Miss is 1-4 in the SEC now, so it's not a, you know, that we're joking. It's not that shocking of a win for Mizzou to go down and win the game. It's shocking they would win by 25.
Yeah.
But Ole Miss is 9-8 overall this year, so they aren't exactly Auburn that Missouri went and got a win at. They lose by 40-something to Arkansas and then lead A&M for a good portion of that game and find a way to lose and then go down and punk Ole Miss. So that is odd. It's last Friday with Mick Schaefer, that was after Mizzou had gotten beaten down by Arkansas, and K-State had ended up losing to TCU when they had the four-point lead with like 20 seconds to go, and TCU missed the shot, and unfortunately they got the offensive rebound, the putback, and all of that stuff, and they ended up winning the game. And Mick said, you know, look, Konzo Martin's firing is probably the end, and probably should be the end, and he said the loss to TCU feels like, okay, that's the beginning of now. You know, you get to the end of the season and you got to move on from Bruce Weber. And all they've done since then is beat Texas Tech in Texas.
Yeah, a couple of ranked teams. I think Bruce Weber's doing all right now.
No doubt, man. No doubt. I mean, if you can go back and find a way to just close out the game against TCU, obviously we'd still be talking about K-State the way that we are with the win over Texas and Texas Tech to show how good of a team they are and how deep the Big 12 is, how good the Big 12 is this year. Good night. Oklahoma State is, we've talked about this before, is talented. They're not winning a lot of games, but they're talented enough to beat Baylor. And, you know, Iowa State can beat Texas Tech. Kansas State can beat Texas Tech.
Iowa
Texas
State
can...
is ranked and they're tied for last in the Big 12.
That's amazing.
They're tied for eighth with K-State and Oklahoma, and they're a ranked team.
It is an amazing stat. It is unbelievable. KU, the outright leader right now in the Big 12. Shocker. Stop me if you've heard that before. KU 4-1, Texas Tech and Baylor coming in at 4-2. And then remember when TCU was 0-1? It was teams that have not won in the Big 12. Kansas State and TCU, the last two winless teams in the Big 12. And TCU got the win. It's like, wow, Kansas State is 0-4. And now they're 2-4 with them. I mean, on Friday, you're looking at the next two games for Kansas State. It's 0-6.
Yeah.
It's an 0-6 start for Bruce Weber. And instead, it's 2-4 and two of the bigger wins in the Big 12. So it has been a crazy season so far already. Texas sitting at 3-3 and some people's pick for the Big 12 or maybe even finishing second, certainly in the top three, and they could still finish in the top three of the Big 12 this year. But you're right, it is it's been an unbelievable season so far. So KU beating Oklahoma, K-State knocking off Texas last night by one, Texas Tech facing off against Iowa State winning by 12, Baylor beating West Virginia, getting back on track for Baylor. So an interesting season the rest of the way for the Big 12. And Kansas is... You know, it seems like doing what Kansas has done in years past with Bill Self when they've won the Big 12 is they've taken care of games that you say, you know, they should beat that team, even when they may struggle at certain times in the game, and even if it may be a close game. I mean, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma, a shot here or there, we could be talking about three losses for Kansas. But it's not the case. We're talking about winning those games because they made plays when it mattered and they took care of those teams, where we're seeing other teams in the Big 12 not doing that. Texas not taking care of teams even in a close game that they should beat. Let's be real. Texas should beat Kansas State with the players that they have.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes that win so impressive for Bruce Weber and the players and that team, is for them to go and get that win by one, by five, by seven, doesn't matter. Just simply winning that game at Texas, especially early on when it felt like Texas was going to keep the Wildcats at you know, arm's length and just keep them not really in contention in that game. Now, he had the early 10, 11-point lead, whatever that was, and then good on K-State. So, I mean, Texas not being able to do that. Obviously, Baylor losing some games against some teams that they should not lose to, and Kansas just simply doing what Kansas does and, you know, moving on and winning games, and only one loss in the Big 12 this year and some close wins along the way. Big shot by Christian Brown. Three-pointer with, 13 seconds left in the game?
It was so awesome when he hit the shot. He was jawing with those fans on courtside, and he blew them a kiss. Those guys were talking smack to him as he was putting the three in the air, and he turned and starts jawing with them and blows a kiss their way. I love his attitude, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago. Like, there, you know, teams that have the white guy that everybody hates, but if he plays for your team, you love him.
Right.
And
oh, yeah, for sure.
Christian Brown is that guy right now. He's the J.J. Redick, the Wojciechowski. He's Tyler Hansbrough,
Boshi.
Yeah, the white guy that everybody hates. And right now, Christian Brown is all of the other fan bases' white guy that we hate. And KU fans are just eating it up. And I absolutely loved that last night. He brings a lot of energy to this team, despite what he's just doing as far as scoring and rebounding. Mm-hmm. He brings a lot of energy and a lot of swag to this team because he plays with that sort of attitude and just trying to get under the other team, the other fans, get under everybody's skin, and I freaking love it.
I hope this isn't viewed. It would seem that this is going to be, or probably, you know, viewed as an insult, and I don't mean it to be an insult. I actually mean it to be a compliment. Christian Brown plays punkish. Like, I look at him like, that damn punk on the court. But you only care about that guy when he's balling.
Yeah.
You only care about that guy when he's beating you, and you're annoyed as hell that he's beating you, and he's also jawing with you. Freaking punk. And to me, it's actually a compliment that he plays that way, and he does that with that attitude, because there is that swag. And you know what? I mean, Ochai doesn't offer that. Ochai's just like, show up, business suit, shirt and tie.
He's just smooth.
Clock in, clock out, slide down the dinosaur, go home to your wife and kids. Like, and just, you know, playing phenomenal basketball. Christian Brown's a knock down the shot and tell you about it.
down the
court the other way when he does that. And there's nothing wrong with having that that attitude on a team, because especially if you're good, the team is good. Because it helps with the sort of the you know, between the ears, like you can tick somebody off and take them out of their game, or just sort of show that, all right, well, we thought we had a chance in this game, but then this guy's doing that. And it wasn't just Christian Brown. Obviously, we talk about Ochai with a couple of big threes, the swinging gait that they had in the corner on the inbounds play, and Bill Self is one of the best in America in the underneath, out of bounds, after timeout plays. I mean, he's brilliant. The layups and open threes that his teams get all the time off of that shows why he's, you know, hey, he's a good recruiter, and, you know, he can build a roster and a team and win games, but he's also pretty damn good in X's and O's and getting his, you know, players, the right players in the right spot to have some easier, higher percentage shots, and that was the case last night. And, you know, Ochai diving into the crowd over the scores table and, you know, going through that, and there'd be, you know, concerns about that, certainly.
Did you hear Gurley this morning on the Border Patrol? He said that, you know, those tables are in there pretty good, and Ochai, like, moved the whole table. He said that it's not something that's supposed to happen, and Ochai moved the whole table. And so he said Bill Self might tell him next time, maybe just take it a little easy on that one. Just let it go out of bounds. Yeah. We can't really lose you.
Did Nate then offer a, well, if you were by the table and it moved, then it must have been some sort of collision.
Surprised your girth didn't stop the table from moving there, Gurley.
We didn't get anything like that from Nate. I mean, slipping. Nate just slipping in that. It was probably because Steven wasn't there. Nate can offer those little jabs because Steven's going to, you know, set it up. He's going to put it on a tee and then watch those guys swing back and forth at each other and put a little gasoline on the fire. Maybe if it's just Nate and Greg talking, they, you know, put their swords aside and just, you know, hang out for a little bit and have a friendly conversation.
I don't want to know what Nate and Greg do with their swords.
Well, they swing at each other with their swords when typically in those interviews.
Yeah.
Apparently not that time.
One thing left
apparently
that Christian Brown needs to do, and I want to see it. So, and I'm sure the texters are going to tell me that he's already done it at some point, and I just haven't seen it. Christian Brown needs to get up on defense, top of the key, and he needs to slap the floor.
No, no, he doesn't.
Slap the floor when the people are coming down.
Slapping that, the floor that's how is you go, such fake juice.
That's how you go ultimate white guy that the other team hates. Oh. Get up there and slap the floor like Grayson Allen or Steve Wojciechowski. Like, why are they all at Duke?
Woj. Hurley. Because that's what Duke does. It's such fake juice, man. Like, let's slap the floor. What's slapping the floor do? It's not even a good stance if you're going to bend down and slap the floor. Like, you're not even a good enough team. Oh, I'm so low. I'm ready to play. I'm going to slap the floor. Oh, okay, well, you slap the floor while I drive by you and dunk. So I hope he never does that. Maybe he's already done it. And if he did it, that just adds to the punkish reputation that he has. No, I don't think he has done that. I hope he hasn't done that, nor do I hope he ever does that. But you know what? I feel good also for Mark Smith, you know, because they win back-to-back games over ranked teams. He has some big shots in those games. He scores another 22 in the game last night for K-State. And, you know, he was a guy that, look, I was annoyed by him. I will fully admit it. I watched Mark Smith play, and he annoyed me at times. But the difference with those years watching Mark Smith and this year is that I had an emotional investment in that team, and I was affected one way or another by a win or a loss. I was annoyed or just simply okay. A win was like, all right, they did what they're supposed to do. Loss is like, what the hell, man, right? I mean, the losses bother you more than wins sometimes. But Mark Smith became a frustrating player because it seemed like he was so hot and cold. But there were a number of players on Mizzou that were doing the same things, that were hot and cold. But now that he goes to K-State, and, you know, he was a good player for Mizzou while he was there, and I'm happy for him. I'm happy for Xavier Pinson. I'm happy for Parker Brown. I'm happy for those guys. I'd love to be happy for the players on Mizzou and the way that they're playing. Davis last night, happy for him and the night that he had, and good on Mizzou winning. But as I've said the last month or so, the conversation that I have about Mizzou is who's the next coach. I mean, that's unfortunate, but that's reality of where we're at. I thought we would be doing that with Bruce Weber, but that's not the case. It's Bruce Weber, you know, getting a couple of wins. And I know after the Texas Tech game, there was the commentary from some, not all, but some K-State fans of, yeah, this is what Bruce Weber does. Wins a game like that and then, you know, sinks and lives off the, hey, remember when you beat Texas Tech in that game? You know, what's he going to do moving forward? That, to me, was the importance of last night's game, is there can be a dismissing of the, okay, you played well one night. You also lost to TCU the same week. Mm-hmm. So, cool, you beat Tech. But to bounce back and to take care of Texas, to me, solidifies and makes the Tech win more legit, if that makes sense. That it adds more of a or it takes a little flukiness away from it. It's less fluky if they go and get beat down by Texas, lose to TCU, lose to West Virginia, and mixed in that four-game stretch as a win over Texas Tech. You go, okay, yeah, that's a nice game. But they, you know, have a lead late against TCU. They play with, you know, me, you, and Drake against West Virginia out there, and then Beards might have been coaching in that game, and they almost win, have a lead late against TCU, and then they beat Tech and beat Texas. You know, I'd love to see what this team would have been able to do if they had a full roster against West Virginia. You know, when they took care of business against TCU.
Yeah.
It's ifs and buts, but, you know, we might be talking about a four-game winning streak for this K-State team.
Well, and this is a team that has, like, legitimately now after these last two games, you can say they have tournament aspirations, and you wonder how much that TCU game could come back to haunt them as far as just being a really bad loss. Now, maybe not. TCU's now won a couple games in a row as well, and they're 2-1, so maybe by the end of the season, TCU's better than we think, and that's not an albatross of a loss hanging around their neck. But I thought it was interesting. You might have already heard this morning, so if you did, then it's not that interesting, but people listening might not have heard. So Mark Smith, he's 17th in the Big 12 in scoring. He's averaging 11.29 points per game, but do you know what he is in the Big 12 in rebounding?
No idea.
He's number one.
Mark Smith, I would have guessed he was top five because of asking me that.
Leads the freaking Big 12 in rebounding, 8.29 rebounds per game, and that is tops in the Big 12.
Good for him, man.
Yeah.
Good for good for Mark Smith. Big 12 basketball conversation, Big 12 basketball update presented by Grin Eye Care in Olathe and Leawood. Grin Eye Care, meeting all your LASIK and refractive surgery needs. Find them at grineyecare.com. Tonight, TCU, Oklahoma State, 7 o'clock on ESPN+. We take a timeout. We come back. We'll talk some NFL football. We'll talk some Chiefs. The conversation this morning, I did hear the conversation with Jeff Chedia and the boys in the Border Patrol about Jerick McKinnon, that came up. I do want to go back and look at the first game, Buffalo, KC, some of the plays that were made. We did it briefly with Adam Teicher yesterday, but I want to, you know, look at it a little bit more. Probably not time in the next segment, but at some point today, maybe after Cynthia Freeland, we do that. But we'll take a timeout, and I want to ask Corey this question about Jerick McKinnon based on a conversation that has been had the last couple of days, and then they had this morning with Jeff Chedia. We do that next right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, The Zone, on a Wednesday. We continue with more next. 913-912-4810, 913-912-4810, text line, if you want to be a part of the show. A lot of texts coming in about Jason Sutherland. I think that's who a lot of people think of, especially back in the Big Eight. You know, one of my favorite Missouri Tigers of all time, because I knew everybody hated him.
Exactly.
Oh, everybody hated him so much.
You love that guy if that guy's on your team.
Oh, he was the embodiment of punkish play on the court. Oh man, everybody like that he's a punk, man. I can't stand that guy. And I'm like, yeah, I love that guy. He's a punk. That's great, man. But yeah, a lot of Jason Sutherland talk. A lot of Duke players, a lot of KU players, oddly enough, and then Jason Sutherland. So yeah, 913-912-4810, 913-912-4810. We'll talk with Cynthia Freeland coming up at 11 o'clock. In the next segment, we'll talk with Matt Tate, a little KU basketball conversation with him. Each time we talk with him after a KU game, it's presented by 23rd Street Brewery. So we do that today. So here's my question to you, Corey. We didn't really talk about this yesterday, even though we discussed Jerick McKinnon. We did a lot with Adam Teicher in a conversation with McKinnon and, of course, talked a lot about it on Monday. And there's some that is the, you know, texts on Monday that came in, and some tweets as well that were like, you know, chill, it's one game. All right, he had a good game. It was the Steelers. They suck. And who's to say that Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Darrell Williams, had they been healthy, would not have done the same thing, and you'd have said, wow, look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That was an awesome game. Maybe this is a breakout for him, or maybe this is what you're going to get in the postseason. Or, hey, look at Darrell Williams continuing to do what he was doing late in the season without Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But it was McKinnon, it was his night, therefore, and it's fresh, it's new, therefore it's a bigger deal. And Jeff Chedia this morning saying the same thing, saying that, you know, hey, let's chill, it's one game. You know, it's a good game by McKinnon against a bad team, but it's one game. So I'll ask you, Corey, because I've certainly have not held back my thoughts of what I think the McKinnon game means for the Chiefs, not just what he did against the Steelers, but what he can do for the offense. Do you think the McKinnon conversation is overdone based on one game versus a terrible Steelers team?
I don't know if the conversation is overdone. I think that the conversation might be overdone because of what we know about this coaching staff. Because if Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Darrell Williams are good to go, I think those are still the guys. I think Jerick McKinnon gets some touches. Maybe I think he's earned maybe, you know, 5 to 8 touches in a game. But if Clyde can go, and if Darrell Williams can go, those are the guys that got them here, and this is a coaching staff that sticks with their guys. And, I mean, how long did it take for Dan Sorensen to get moved out for Thornhill? And, you know, yeah. I mean, they've stuck by Hitchens all this time, you know, playing as many snaps as he plays when clearly Bolton and Gay are your two better linebackers. I just think that this is a coaching staff that sticks with the guys that brought them there. And I think Darrell Williams has been a guy that they've been in love with for years. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they've got, obviously, they put the first-round pick in the guy. They like him when he's healthy, because even Darrell Williams loses the touches because Clyde gets the touches. I don't think it's a bad conversation to have. I think it's a fruitless conversation to have based on past precedent with these coaches, because I don't think it matters what we think. But I do think Jerick McKinnon brings something that the other guys don't. I mean, he's got speed. Neither of these guys do much on the outside, or, you know, like stretch run plays or getting to the border, you know, getting to the boundary. And Jerick McKinnon can do that, and he looked really good the other night. I do think that part of that is the Steelers. I think that if Darrell if Darrell Williams is healthy, I think Darrell Williams has a good game. If Clyde's healthy, I think Clyde has a good game because I don't think much of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I think Jerick McKinnon should get a few more touches than he's gotten previously, but I just think it's kind of a fruitless conversation in the sense that the coaches, they're not going to be the ones to switch things up. If Clyde and Darrell are playing, Clyde and Darrell are going to be the ones playing the most.
The hope is that, you know, we have this conversation on Monday after a win, that Clyde was healthy, Darrell's healthy, and you say, well, look at the split between the running back carries, because you would have three healthy running backs that do something different when they're out there. Darrell Williams is different than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's different than Jerick McKinnon. They all, and different than Derek Gore. They all do something different when they're out there. The great part about McKinnon is his ability to have big plays, but with the fact that Edwards-Helaire is injured and Darrell Williams is injured. Because if McKinnon is not on this team, it's Derek Gore is your main running back. Okay, back. Fine back. You know, I think he's going to get what's blocked for him. But you'd rather have Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Darrell Williams in the game if, you know, you had your druthers. But what McKinnon can offer is the fresh legs, because he didn't play all that much this year and had the injury, so where he was on IR. So the fresh legs, the burst of speed that the other two backs do not have, he certainly offers that, and offers a guy that, if healthy, can make plays, bigger game-changing plays or game-breaking plays that the other guys we haven't seen make. And maybe the most important part about McKinnon is the fact that, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Darrell Williams right now are you know, limited with injuries. And Mark Boelrichter on Monday, I think it was Monday, it might have been yesterday, I'm not sure, said that he doesn't think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is playing again this year. Not because it's a coach's decision, but because of injury. Because he's not going to, you know, be back in time from that shoulder injury. We'll find out today. I mean, we'll hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, but Andy Reid will talk, and they would have already practiced, so we'll see if Clyde Edwards-Helaire goes out there and practices. He practiced last Wednesday and then limited and then did not practice, so it went backwards for him last week. And if he doesn't practice today, then I doubt he's going to play this weekend. So they would have tried it last week, and then it might have been, you know, it might be 2 weeks that he doesn't play after giving it a try, and it being worse, as Andy Reid said Monday, the shoulder was worse than what Edwards-Helaire thought it would be when he tried it out last Wednesday. He thought it was going to be better and immediately found out that, okay, it's not there. So maybe Boelrichter's right that we're not going to see Edwards-Helaire again this year, and Darrell Williams clearly was limited with his toe, and Andy Reid talked about it after the game that he tried to push off but just couldn't do it. So there's the most important part about Jerick McKinnon, if we're being honest. You know, he can do some different things for the offense, but he's a better back than Derek Gore.
Yeah.
So it may not matter. It might be interchangeable, just throw a back out there. But Jerick McKinnon's going to do more with the plays that are there and his touches than Derek Gore is going to do.
Yep, and I think ultimately it's a good insurance policy at this point. Everybody feels really good about Jerick McKinnon. So if Clyde can't go and if Darrell's still limited, then I feel really good about what McKinnon can do. We felt really good about what he could do when the season started, so it's been kind of a disappointing year for him, but he's got the chance. You called it before the playoffs that he could be kind of one of the breakout guys for this team for the playoffs, and if that's the case, then maybe it'll be nice that he was on the shelf so much of the season because he will have those fresh legs.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that with Damian Williams a couple of years ago, and I know we go back to 2019 a lot because they did win the Super Bowl that year, but we go back to that, and Damian Williams had the injuries at times and you know, in 2019, and then finally was ready to go and stayed healthy. That's a big part. You got to stay healthy, and if McKinnon can stay healthy, yeah, then that would certainly matter and would help for this team, even if all three of them are out there. That would certainly be great. 913-912-4810. 913-912-4810. Last one, and then we'll take a break and talk with Matt Tate. Eric Eager's tweet from last night. He tweeted this out. I don't know if you saw this, Corey. Jerick McKinnon has 5 runs of 10 yards or more for the Chiefs this year on 24 carries. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has 9 in 119 carries. And I think that's you know, just the difference between the two. You know, Edwards-Helaire might get, you know, 3 or 4 more yards. It might be blocked for him on a broken play where McKinnon may not get that. But if it's there, McKinnon's going to have the burst and offer those bigger plays. We'll see. I like them both. I don't think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a terrible back. I just like what McKinnon can do for this offense in offering that speed and bouncing it outside, which he did a couple times on Sunday night against the Steelers. We take a timeout. We come back. We'll talk with Matt Tate, some more college basketball, and then we'll get into NFL the rest of the way. Cynthia Freeland, Mick Schaefer, Thrift Store Price is Right, Main Street Countdown, Chiefs at the Podium, all still to come. It's a Wednesday edition of The Zone. We'll talk with Matt Tate coming up next here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Corey Anderson and the Drake. We talk some college basketball now. Kansas wins down in Norman against Oklahoma. Matt Tate, Lawrence Turner, WorldKUSports.com, presented by 23rd Street Brewery. Day after a KU game, we talk with Matt Tate. 23rd Street Brewery presents Matt when he comes on the show with us. Matt, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I am doing just fine, sir, doing just fine. Your takeaway from last night and maybe something that impressed you the most from KU finding a way to win 67-64 while somehow going through a 20-2 run by the opposing team on the road and still winning.
Yeah, man, it's easy. This one's easy. Ochai's a beast. I mean, to have that happen to your hand, obviously not his shooting hand, but hand, wrist, and to be able to hang in there and not only keep playing, but stay in it enough to be there when it counts and make some clutch shots, some of the absolute biggest shots of the game. I mean, I think that's a moment that we might look back on and, you know, if he ends up being an All-American or if he ends up maybe even being the National Player of the Year, which he's certainly in the running for right now. You know, 10 points doesn't do anything for anybody, but I think that'll be a moment that you look back on and say, wow, that's where you realize this dude was different. And that's not a knock on junior Ochai or sophomore Ochai or freshman Ochai. I mean, he was an important player and a talented dude in all of those seasons as well. But last night made it very clear to me that this is a different guy than we've seen. And, you know, we know that because he's scoring more, but I think it's so much more than just his scoring ability right now. I mean, he is without question this team's leader. He's their heartbeat. And, you know, that's what leaders do. Self said it after the game. He's a winner. And that's what guys do. And I don't know that Ochai in the last 3 years would have done that. I think he had a tendency when things like that might have happened or even just missing shots to kind of fade into the background a little bit. And last night he could have easily done that, and he would have had an incredible excuse to do it. You know, he damn near broke his left wrist. Obviously, x-rays were negative, but it was pretty serious and a pretty hard fall there. So for him to not fade to the background and just keep coming and keep coming and keep coming and then hit those shots at the end and make the pass to Brown for the game winner, I mean, that's the easiest takeaway for me, and I'll remember that one the rest of the season and probably long beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, he dives in, you know, trying to get the ball, and you talk about it. The x-rays were negative, thankfully, for Ochai, that they were negative. He can return to the game, heavily taped up wrist. And, you know, it's not like, you know, you practice with it. You go through a couple of days of dealing with the injury, dealing with the tape there, and, you know, shooting and just playing your game while, you know, having that injury. You deal with it in the game, and you don't get to call a timeout and go and shoot around when you're out there in the game. Like, you don't get that. Like, it's in your practice shots are game shots. And so for him to step up the way that he did late, I thought was big, and I think it goes to show who Ochai has become and scoring those 10 points. And the play that, you know, I mean, it's something that Bill Self does all the time with out of bounds, you know, underneath out of bounds plays that, you know, they got the swinging gate, or what does he call it, elevator, they do the double screen as Ochai runs through it, turns around, knocks down the shot, which is great, obviously. But Christian Brown, I thought it was great after the game. He hits the shot, and then he's jawing with the Oklahoma crowd. After the game, he said that they were just telling me good job and congrats, and I told him thank you. That's what it looked like. It looked like a crowd saying, you know what, nice shot, dude. You're on the opposing team. We're probably going to lose, but you know what, respect. Good job. That's what it seemed like was going on, right?
100%. Yeah, he added to that. You know, we've got a lot of great friends down here in Oklahoma. So, of course, that's total BS. And, of course, Christian Brown lives for those moments. And I'm sure there's some people that don't like it. I'm not one of them. I love it. I think that every game has that in it, whether it's basketball or volleyball or football or tennis or whatever the heck it is. And I think if your team doesn't have a guy like that, or maybe multiple guys like that, I think you're missing something. And KU clearly has it. He's shown that fire and tenacity all year. He doesn't care. He will talk to anybody. He will compete his tail off, and he is not afraid of any moment or anybody. And you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. That doesn't mean he's gonna come out on the right side of that every time. Sometimes he's gonna run his mouth, and then somebody else is gonna get the last laugh or the last word. But that was obviously not the case last night, and it wasn't just at the end there. I mean, you know, I don't know if you could see it on TV, but that corner a couple of times earlier in the game was in his face, in his ear, you know, letting him hear it. And whether he missed or made, you know, he was engaged with them. So that was sort of the culmination of a night's worth of discussions, we'll say. I think that's what he used. So, but yeah, his fire and you know, the ability to knock down that shot in a big moment when your team needed it. My favorite quote of his last night, other than the one you just said, was you know, that everybody else had made a big shot. It was my turn.
It's my turn.
I think this team has that mentality. I think, I don't know that they've had it all year, but I think they have it now. I think it's starting to click, and I think a big part of that is Jalen Wilson's resurgence. He has come back from the dead. He looks like the Jalen Wilson we remember from last season and the Jalen Wilson that everybody knows he can be. And he's a big shot maker, too. And so you've got a guy like that. You've got a guy like Ochai. You've got a guy like Christian Brown. You know, there are others, too. But when you have those three that can – any one of them in any moment like that could step up and just jump up and make a shot like that to win a game or to save a team. You know, you got something. And it wasn't pretty. There's no way anybody's going to say anything about that game was pretty, except for maybe the first 3 or 4 minutes of the second half. But they found a way to get it done. Nobody's going to look back at this one and remember the details of it. They're just going to see the W by the final score there, and that's what you got to do in this conference. And I think all those guys last night really were excited about the win, not only because they won, but because of what it could do for them down the road. Those are the types of games you have to win when things count. We know that. We've seen it every year. But now they know they can do it, and they did one against Iowa State similar to that, and two pretty good teams. I like OU's team. I mean, you know, they were getting votes this week. They're not ranked or anything crazy like that, but a well-coached team with a lot of talent, and that was a tough win last night.
Matt Tate, Lawrence Turner World, KUSports.com, presented by 23rd Street Brewery. You mentioned Jalen Wilson, and I think that's a big part of last night's game and his getting back to being Jalen Wilson that KU could rely on at times. Wilson, Brown, and Ochai, 7 of 15 behind the arc, 41 points and 17 rebounds. Greg Gurley, whether it was last night on the broadcast or maybe this morning in an interview he did here on the station with Nate Bucati and the Border Patrol, said that those guys, Wilson, Brown, and Agbaji, if they can play consistent basketball and look like that, and obviously you can't expect 41 and 17 and, you know, 50% from the three-point line every night, but he said, you know, it can remind them of Malik Svi and Devontae in 2018. Do you see that comparison if Jalen's playing like that and you sort of know what you're going to get from Brown and Ochai?
Yeah, that's pretty good. I hadn't really thought of that. Now they just need a LeGerald Vick because LeGerald Vick was a huge part of that team too, and maybe they have one. You know, I don't know, but maybe it's Remy, right? And we still got a long way to go to figure that situation out. But yeah, I mean, I think that's probably spot on, and you're starting to see it take shape. It hasn't been the case all year, obviously, but now that Jalen's back and you know, has done this consistently for a couple of weeks, right after Elf said he's coming, I know he's going to start making shots. I can feel it. He's right there, and go figure, he was right, you know. So that's Jalen is a such a different dude for this team because Christian Brown is what he's tenacity and he's become a better scorer and reliable and all those things, and then Ochai's just a finisher and a scorer and all that. But Jalen is a guy who I think Jalen's confidence feeds everybody else's confidence. I think these guys really believe in themselves and this team as a whole when Jalen's out there doing what he can do and believing in himself and really forcing the action in a positive way. I just think that Jalen's not the loudest dude, but he can be. He's not the most finesse player, but he can be. He's not the strongest or the fastest, but he can be. I mean, there's so many things that he can be. And when he puts that together and these guys see it, I think it gives that whole roster, that whole lineup, an added dose of confidence. And quite frankly, I think with Ochai and Brown, it gives them a little bit of a relief, you know? I mean, they feel like, okay, thank God we don't have to carry this whole thing tonight. And let's get Jalen going or watch him do his thing. And so I think there was an element of that with those three that you mentioned or the girl you mentioned. And it is all about consistency and being reliable. And, you know, those guys have all played a lot of minutes and big games. And I think they're comfortable in that role right now. It just took Jalen a little longer than the other two, but it's hard. It's hard to pick a best player. I mean, it was really hard last night. I do our KUSports.com rankings after every game just for fun, just to give a different look at kind of the game instead of just quotes and everything. And it was hard, man. I put Ochai number one, and maybe it was graded on a curve a little bit, but when you almost break your wrist and you come back in and you carry him down the stretch and then you make the play to win the game, even though someone else made the shot, that's number one for me. But it was hard. I mean, Brown was really good, obviously hit the game winner. Jalen was really good again. And I think any given game, any one of those guys could be your best player. And if that's the case and they're all consistently in that space, then the guys like David McCormick and Mitch Lightfoot and Jalen Coleman-Lands and even Remy Martin or DeJuan Harris, then those guys can truly just fill roles. And if they fill those roles and they execute what they're supposed to execute, then this team's pretty tough to beat. But it's where guys start trying to play outside of themselves and things get a little chaotic where they can kind of unravel a little bit. But, it's taking them a little longer. Here it is, January 19th, but they're starting to find it. And I think road wins add to confidence and obviously getting everybody in that consistently delivering night in, night out place, that adds to confidence too.
Matt Tate, Lawrence from the World, KUSports.com, presented by 23rd Street Brewery there in Lawrence. Matt, you're the man. Appreciate it as always, sir. Safe travels on your way back. We will talk next week.
All right, Jason. Thanks, man. Take care.
Absolutely. Matt Tate, Lawrence from the World, KUSports.com, presented by 23rd Street Brewery. KUK State, 3 o'clock. ESPN Plus, yeah. K-State coming off a couple of big wins. KU leading the Big 12 at 4-1. ESPN Plus. Thanks, Big 12. Yeah, we'll see. Also, the NFL is going on at that time, too. Thank you to Matt Tate joining us. He does during the week after a KU game, and he's presented by 23rd Street Brewery. We take a timeout. We come back. We'll talk with Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analytics expert. We talk some Chiefs, some playoffs with Cynthia next.